I'm Lindsay with Wild Root Flower Company.
And I'm Shannon from Bloom Hill Farm. Over the last 6 years, we've leaned on each other as we grew our farms into the profitable six-figure farms they are today.
We want you to join us each week as we have real, honest conversations about life and business. And we promise you'll leave feeling inspired and your farming toolbox will be filled with actionable strategies you can implement at any stage in your business.
Learn from our mistakes as we talk business, marketing, and growing techniques to help you create the farm of your dreams.
So let's roll up our sleeves
and get the dirt on flowers.
Hey everyone, happy Friday. Welcome to another episode of The Dirt on Flowers. Normally we chit chat, but I'm not chit chatting today because I am so excited about today's guest. She's dancing behind the scenes with us and I think might be the only podcast out there, podcaster that has better intro music than us. So
I love it.
Best. I mean,
it's very recognizable.
It is.
It's like, yes, I agree.
So today on the podcast, we have our friend Corinna Bench of My Digital Farmer. Corinna, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh my God, I totally want to laugh. So glad to be here, you guys. Thank you for loving on my podcast music. I love it too.
Oh, yeah. Just your podcast. I mean, yes. Lindsay and I for many years have discussed things that we heard in your podcast. So it's really cool that we get to have you on because you've been, you know, a little bit of a source of inspiration for Lindsay and I too. So
yeah,
this is very cool.
Well, I'm honored. I'm honored to be here.
Well, good.
I
have to say, you did. No, you were on our guest list, like one of the first people, I think, if we go back to our Trello board, we were like, Corinna, you think Corinna? I don't know. We were like had three episodes and we're like, we'll check in. Like, we get closer to 80.
I was going to say, what took so long?
Oh, no. We needed some practice. So glad to have you here. So I know today marketing is one of those topics that it comes up a lot in the insiders group and with our live Zooms. We get a lot of questions about marketing. And so Shannon and I, we do a pretty good job with marketing on our farms.
Yeah.
I think we do a good job. But like to really dig in and give somebody like a real answer, you're going to excel at this. So first of all, I met Corinna because I was on her podcast. We had so much fun. And afterwards I emailed her and I'm like, I just want to be friends with you. Like, you know, we both kind of had the same thing. We're like, can we be friends? And so we've just sort of had this relationship that's like been since then. And so glad that you're on here today. So Corinna, just sort of tell everybody about yourself. If they don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about your business, like your farming business and how you've like grown into this, you know, online platform with My Digital Farmer as well.
Sure. So I am one of the owners with my husband at Shared Legacy Farms out in Elmore, Ohio, which is just a little bit outside of Toledo in Northwest Ohio. We have been in business since 2008. We're an organic, certified organic vegetable farm. And our claim to fame is our CSA. We have an 18-week season that runs June through October. That's kind of our main gig. We do have a few wholesale accounts, but over the years, we have perfected the art of managing and inspiring a community of food lovers and local farm lovers, teaching people how to eat, changing the way people eat, and I guess showing them the story behind food. Sometimes I talk about how I feel like I'm growing my own little church. I used to be a youth minister long ago in my prior life before I met my husband and got married. And so I just have some skills, I think, in creating community and educating and inspiring people. So yeah, we have this amazing group of families that stand behind us that we grow our vegetables for. When I first started, though, as a part of the business, when I started helping my husband get that going, I didn't know what I was doing as far as marketing goes. When my husband first started our CSA farm, I was just like taking care of our brand new baby. I wasn't really actively involved in the farm much at all, aside from occasionally helping pack boxes. But I began to notice that he was struggling with managing the customers and just communicating with them, letting them know what to do with the food. And so I said, well, let me start writing them a little newsletter. And that was kind of the beginning of everything. I sort of suddenly became in charge of marketing without without asking. And I didn't know how to find customers. I didn't know how to do any of it. And so there came a kind of a breaking point when we had to jump to like 400 members from 200 members in one season. And I just was like, I need to learn what I'm doing, because there were no classes at conferences on how to do marketing. And so I had to go outside the industry to study it and practice it. And that's when I ran across like the online marketing thing that's, I think, a lot of people are aware of now. But I began to study the rules of online marketing. I followed a ton of influencers. I started listening to podcasts about marketing. And I thought, what if I applied this stuff to our CSA farm? And I focused on mostly on like customer retention at first, like really taking care of the current customer and over serving them and teaching them how to be successful with the product. And that like helped with our retention numbers. And then after that, I kind of shifted to like social media and like, how do you get people on your email list? And how do you build leads? And over time, I would say pretty quickly, within like 6 to 8 months, there was a dramatic difference in our sales. I suddenly became like confident that I could replicate our results year after year. And it was so stark and amazing that I couldn't wait to share it with other farmers, because I'm like, I know there are other farmers like me who struggle with this, and like, they need to know about this stuff. And so I created this Facebook group, a private Facebook group for farmers. That was my very first act, where I would show up like every week, and I would just share something I had done and what I was learning. And there were like 4 people in this group for like almost a year. And then suddenly it, you know, it kind of took off. But
yeah,
I just kept showing up. And then that morphed into a podcast. I created a few online workshops. And now I, you know, I've turned into this mentor for other farmers around the world, really just trying to teach them and inspire them that, you know, it is possible to create consistent revenue and to build a marketing system that will work for your farm. So that's what I'm passionate about. I just want to make people confident, and I want to inspire them.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. It's such a, yeah.
Yes. Well, Corinna, I give you a lot of credit, because the marketing world these days is very complex. I mean, we're being inundated with new marketing strategies, algorithms. How do we market ourselves and get ourselves seen? I mean, there's like a million different people telling you to do it a million different ways. And I know we have a lot of new farmers who are trying to wade through all of this advice. And it can be big and scary, especially if you're not somebody who's like just so open to sharing themselves or what they're doing, or they don't feel confident in their business. So I guess, what advice would you give some of our newbies who are just dipping their toes into the marketing world amongst all of the information that's coming at us from every different direction?
I think what I would say is, you're right. There are always new, different ways to implement marketing. Every month there's, now we should try TikTok, and now we need to do this, and now we need to do that. And it can be super overwhelming. You sort of feel like you're pointing and shooting, and you're not really sure if you're effective. So what I would say is, a brand new person should really take the time to learn the framework of marketing. Like and what I mean by the framework is, what is the concept of the customer value journey? Like, if you were to go to marketing school, no matter what specific strategy you actually end up using to build your business, it all kind of falls back onto this skeleton, this basic framework of traffic, leads, conversion, fulfillment. I mean, those are sort of the 4 pillars. And when you look at the specifics of how you do that, well, those can change based on the industry, based on what's coming out, you know, this year, next year. But if you can understand, like, I need to have an element in my business that gets brand awareness, like gets people to know I even exist. And I need to have an element in my marketing system that causes a person to turn into an actual lead that will attract a certain kind of right, perfect person into my brand. And I need to have an element in my business then that's going to actually get them to buy the first thing. Right? That's the conversion point. And then I need to have a fulfillment strategy. Like, I need to have something that makes sure that when they get the product, it's awesome and they love it. And then they want to come back and buy more or buy that thing again. Right? So I guess I would say, educating yourself on what is that overall framework
is super helpful. What are those key principles? Because the individual strategies may change over time. Facebook may not be around in 10 years, but the strategy, the framework will always be there. And as long as you know what the framework is, you can kind of pivot and try lots of different strategies to make sure you're hitting each of those different elements. I would also say that it's really important to make marketing a focus in your business, because if you do so at your peril, like if you don't, you do so at your peril. Because in order to make money in your business, you've got to make offers. You have to learn how to make offers. You have to learn how to attract a client. You have to learn how to warm them up and make them want to buy your stuff. You have to know how to fulfill and serve them. So these are kind of the key pieces that if you know what the framework is.
I think social media confuses marketing, in my opinion, because I think people's perception of marketing is social media. And they're like, I'm not being seen, or I'm not being, you know, this isn't being seen. And it's like, well, that's not marketing. That's like a component, right? It's a piece of like a tool that you can use in that. But to like have an overarching understanding of what marketing means, because I don't feel like I really understood that. And listening to podcasts, and you know, that's how I found your podcast. And I've done other programs, and I've read books, and I, you know, those sort of things where I needed to sort of understand even what marketing meant.
I hear that from a lot of people who come into my ecosystem, where they think that marketing is social media, like that's what they're going to be working on. When I say, what are you doing with your marketing right now? It's like, well, I do this on Facebook. I do this on Instagram. I'm making reels. And that is one small component that could be in your marketing system, but you don't have to use social media there. As long as you're hitting that awareness phase in a different way, that would be fine. But like there's so much more to it than just getting onto social media. So I love that you brought that up, because that is a very common
and it can make people feel defeated. I mean, truly, there's social media can be one of those things where it's like, well, you hear, I don't want to put myself out there in that way. And, you know, or I don't have anything interesting to say. And like, or this isn't getting very many views. And
Or it's a time suck. It's a crazy time suck. Like people spend hours on it. And it's like, is that actually driving conversions for you?
Yeah, just like an interesting thought that we just recorded our year in review episode. So I've been thinking a lot about like what worked good this year. And this year I really tried to like reframe my marketing into more of I'm serving my customer. So for me, it's like that education piece in my marketing, so that they feel like they've learned something or gotten something new from me when they get to talk. And so marketing doesn't, in my opinion, always have to be a concentration on sales. Is that the end goal? 100%. But I think people just want to feel valued. They want something positive from you. They want to learn from you. So I think once I started integrating that education piece into some of the marketing strategies, it got easier, just in general, easier for me. And like with the CSA, I mean, do you kind of see that with what you do? I know you do a lot of like coaching with recipes and stuff like that.
Yeah, and absolutely. We do a lot of education once they've purchased. We also do a lot of education before they purchase. They kind of have two different purposes, but it's important to educate your customer on how to actually be successful with your product. And I think that's where that education piece falls. It's something called the excite phase. It's one of the pillars that's in the framework. You need to have some kind of a system around how do I make sure that my customer knows how to use this product well, achieves success, achieves their desired transformation. Some of them will innately know how to do that before they buy, but many of them won't. And so if you don't help them and guide them through that and give them a few tips or some quick wins, then that's where you have retention issues. You know, people feel like, well, this was a waste of money. I'm not doing this again. Education on the front part of the sales funnel before a person decides to actually buy is, I think, kind of leveraging the law of reciprocity, where, you know, there's an exchange of energy. Like, I'm going to share this information with you. And, you know, one of the laws of the universe is like, when I give out goodwill, then it comes back to me. And there's this sense of the customer or the potential customer wanting to do something in return, feeling this gratitude, like, oh, they taught me this. They helped me grow. I'm so grateful. Mm-hmm. And I want to be around a person that's going to continue to invest in me like this. And then they want to reciprocate in kind. And one of the ways they can do that is by buying your stuff. So I think both of those things are kind of happening.
Yeah. I feel like I struggled early on with understanding when I was doing my marketing, like who my customer really was. You know, and I still think something you said to me, Corinna, when I was on the podcast was, you know, you said, it seems like you have a lot of different needs and avatars, like customer avatars within my business. And honestly, that stuck with me because of the place I'm at in my business now is, you know, I wear all the hats and sometimes I just get real exhausted with what I'm pushing or marketing, right? And I'm feeling like, man, is my customer feeling the same way? Like I'm hustling UPIC and weddings and this and that and that. And so where I'm feeling spread thin and all of these different needs and avatars, I'm like, this is sort of I could see this being an issue for me and feeling like I want to simplify. I ultimately think it's going to make my business better. It's going to make me a little bit more sane, more focused, my marketing more energized. I see all the positive things that are with that. There can also be a thread of, I think as a culture, we struggle with scarcity mindset versus abundance, and that would be fear. And so it's like, oh, well, what if I cut something out that means less money? So where I'm rambling with all of this is I think a lot of farmers are all in the same boat. We're like starting this new business with these new businesses and we want to do all the things. And it seems counterproductive to sort of like hone in on a specific enterprise or an avatar. So can you talk a little bit about like what an avatar is if people think that I'm just talking about some movie out there, like if they've not heard that marketing term yet? Wasn't that a movie? It was a movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then like how to identify those like within your own business. So can you like talk about that a little bit today? Because that's really ultimately what we're going to talk about today is just, I should have started with that. I got too damn excited that you were on here. I buzzed right past that part. That we're going to talk about how to like dial in a CSA subscription, a flower subscription, and what that avatar looks like and sort of walk you through this whole process. Because I know that's something that we get asked all the time in the insiders and to say like, I'm a new farmer. Like, how do I even market a CSA subscription? And so to sort of like walk you through that process is what we kind of want to do today. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll start out by like just defining again, what a customer avatar is in the marketing space. This is sometimes called the ICA for ideal customer avatar. And this is the concept where like, it's basically the detailed profile of your perfect potential client. So if you could clone somebody that's currently a client in your business because they're so amazing. Like, who is that person? What are their qualities? And it can include things like demographic. It often includes demographics, so their age, their gender, their income, their education, stuff like that. But it's also deeper than that. It's, you know, what values do they have? Is there a common thread? What do they want? Is there something that they all want as it relates to your product? Is there a pain point or a problem they all have in their life as it relates to your product? What are their common questions that they have or concerns? How do they talk about your product or your industry or the pain point, the problem that you have? And so when you know, if you can see the patterns, when you know how your ideal client thinks, how they talk, what's important to them, it allows you to find more of them because you have such clarity in terms of the messaging that works for them. Like when you know how they talk and what they respond to, well, then you just put more of that stuff out there in your marketing and it will attract more of that kind of client. If your avatar concept is very fuzzy and generalist, like, well, anybody would love flowers. Well, that's not really true. No, then you're gonna go out with a more generalist message and you're not gonna pull anyone in. So the more specific you can be, this is kind of hard for people to grasp because they think specificity is bad, but the more specific you can be, the more likely you're going to be successful in hooking that perfect client.
And there's like a research phase. Yes. Of this. Yep. And I know, you know, I've heard this on your podcast before, Corinna, and actually, I don't even remember what episode it was because you talk about it a lot, but I can think all of us have a customer who's like, you're like, dang, that is this is the best customer I have. Like the shining star, the ones who's always, you know, giving kind words. They're telling everybody about you. You know, you have that person and you encourage me to interview that person. Like, what are the things that they're saying about your business? Like, what are the words that they're using? So I think you challenged me to interview three different, and they were, I thought that they were different people. Like, they would have different things, be saying different things, but really there were so many common threads between the three of them. Like, they loved supporting local. That was mm-hmm. being somebody who like seeks out a local product was one particular thing. You know, it's not always just like women between the age. There's like some really yeah. specific things that come. So I think even if you're just getting started, even in that research phase, that was a really important piece for me. I know you break that down in one of your podcasts too. So what does the research phase look like for you these days?
Yeah, what I always encourage farmers to do is actually get on a Zoom call if possible and record mm-hmm. it, because then mm-hmm. you have this piece of information that you can Smart. Transcribe.
Yeah.
And now you have the actual words that they've used. And I tell people to try and do 10, because I think that's a good sample size. If you interview mm-hmm. 10 people for like 30 minutes each, you will have like enough data to build an amazing marketing campaign. And it has mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm. a person, it has to be one of your clients that you anecdotally can kind of tell this is a good client. So I wouldn't be interviewing mm-hmm. someone who's, you know, doesn't like you, complains a lot. Like, that's not going to give you good information.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Those conversations. And then there's a certain kind of set of questions that I think pull out the gems for your marketing, mm-hmm. not yes or no questions, right? Like, there's open-ended questions that you're trying to figure out. What is the pain point and problem that I solve for you? What is it that you're after? What does transformation look like for you? What is that picture? Mm-hmm. What are you hoping will happen as a result of my product? What were the stumbling blocks? Who else are you looking at besides me? Or who else were you looking at besides my farm? And mm-hmm. why? What ultimately was the trigger that caused you to decide you wanted to do this thing? What was that moment? Like, all these little pieces of information. And you ask like 10 people those same questions, and you will start to hear the same mm-hmm. results. Now, not everything's going to be the same. And you're paying attention to the red threads, the ones that do get mentioned by most of your people. And that's going to tell you, it's going to be a small subset of information, but that's going to show you, these are the words, these are the values, these are the problems that I talk about on my marketing, on my website, in my social, if I'm doing YouTube, if I'm writing emails, wherever I'm putting out content, like, this is the stuff that I speak about.
Yeah.
Do you think this is something that should be done every few years, or like how often, you know, because I'm like sitting here taking notes, like I've sat through this. I actually took the people to dinner. I'm thinking, shoot, a Zoom would have been easier. I know. I wanted to go to dinner too. So, but yeah, that was like, I just, you know, went and sat and chatted with them. And so I'm just thinking, like, is this something I should be doing, continuing to do? Cause I do feel like I need a refresh. And I think keeping it fresh in your business is important, but I'm just curious on your thoughts on that.
I do think it's important to continue to do. I mean, I have a practice of interviewing one of my customers every month. Sometimes I miss in the heat of the season, but just to keep my finger on the pulse, is this mm-hmm. person saying similar things? Another way that you can do it, though, once you kind of get to a size where you have a business that's kind of churning and running, there are other ways that you can get at this information by sending a survey, for instance, mm-hmm. that I have 400 people in my CSA, and, you know, even if only 25% of them actually fill it out, like that's 100 documents that come back to me. And I have a lot of data there that I can see common language. Mm-hmm. Another one that works is to have like a question post in my Facebook group. That'll drive a lot of comments, and I can see what are some of the common threads in the comments. So there's some little tricks of the trade to just touch base and make sure that things are still jiving.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those things you can't like skip mm-hmm. around. Like, you can't just take some other flower farmer's information, because those customers are specific to you. Like, they went to Shannon for a very specific reason versus, you know, what my customers are coming to me for. So there's like, unfortunately, no really like easy slip, mm-hmm. you know, or like work around with it. It's like actually having to sit down and do that work. So
yeah, well, I will say, like, if you're a brand new farm and you don't have customers that you can do this with, then I would say go look at other CSA flower subscription websites and mm-hmm. you know, look at like 5 of them and see what you can tell from there, or go into their reviews. If they have Google reviews, you can go and read those, and that might give you at least something to at least start with. You can put that onto your website.
So thinking about your farm, Karina, What are the different avatars that you have on your farm? Give us an example of like how you might describe that person. Like, what are you looking for, you know, on your farm specifically? And we can talk a little bit about some of our flower farming ones too, but just curious as to how you answer that question for yourself on your farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that I have two primary ones that I have four technically, but there are two that are their revenue drivers. So the first one would be, I call her Molly, and she's a working professional who really values supporting local business. She values her health, and the fact that we're certified organic matters to her. She wants to know who her farmer is. That's a phrase that I hear a lot. I want to know my farmer. I want to know how my food is grown. And she loves to watch the show Chopped. And so this idea of getting a box of veggies and she doesn't know what's going to be in there is like exciting for her, you know, as opposed to the clients or the leads that I have who are like, no, I want to be able to choose what goes into the box. I don't think this is for me. Like for Molly, she doesn't want to think about what goes in the box. She doesn't want to make that decision. She can't wait to see what's going to be in there. And she opens it up and she's like, what can I make with this? And she gets really excited about the idea of being in her kitchen and creating this masterpiece and seeing if it can be as good as something in the restaurant. So for her, the quality of the ingredient matters. She looks for that. She's looking for freshness. She's looking for variety, things that aren't run of the mill. And she's looking for inspiration. So the fact that we have this group of foodies that are all kind of, not all of them, but a lot of them are like her. She loves to be able to see, what are they coming up with? What can I learn from them? And then I would have someone like a Shannon, who is also very busy, has kids, is a little bit more restricted in terms of her time. And so she is looking for quick, easy meals, probably eats out a few times a week, probably does a lot of stuff in her car. And so she wants to have choices.
I'm like, that's me. My name's not Shannon, but that's me. Yeah. Your name is Shannon.
Called out.
I know. I'm like, okay, keep going.
You should not be in my CSA then. No, I'm kidding. No. This is the customer who's going to shop in my online store, who's just going to go in and pick out what she wants on the weeks when she knows she can actually come and get it at the pickup site, because some weeks doesn't work for her, right? If you're in my CSA, like, you got to be there every Thursday from 4 to 6. Otherwise, you don't get it. Or you got to come out to my farm later that weekend, right? So it's got to fit your life. And so for a Shannon, she also values like eating great, healthy food. She wants to know where her food comes from. But that convenience piece or that choice piece is a lot more important to her. And so as a result, she's not going to be attracted to the CSA. Or actually, some of them have been in my CSA, but then they graduate out as their life changes. Like, oh, my kids are now in high school. Sure. I'm like constantly driving around. Like, I can't do that anymore. And now they have this other option. Okay. So that's sort of an example of the two primary income streams in our business. Mm-hmm. I would say I also have a few people that fall into the bulk buy category. Like, they only buy from me when I'm like selling bulk corn, bulk tomatoes, bulk anything, because they're all about the deal. And how can I, you know, I'm a homesteader. I want to store this away. I want to can. I want to get the best possible budget deal. Yeah, those are kind of the three really big ones.
So, I mean, it's okay to have more than one.
It is okay to have more than one. It creates a little bit more confusion in your messaging, but I wouldn't have a whole lot more than like two or three, because I think then it does dilute the messaging in all of your different platforms, or it's just a little more work. You have to really dial up those different messages.
So do you feel like those avatars have changed for you over time as your business grows and those evolves, or do you think those stay the same? And then to piggyback that, do you think that someone can successfully market their farm and not have an avatar?
So I would say that your avatars do morph over time. In fact, when we first started, our only avatar was Molly, like, because that was the product that we had. We just had a traditional CSA. You get what you get. You don't get upset. You got to come on this certain time and day. And then we started to notice that some of our customers wanted more flexibility. And so that caused us to create a product line for that kind of a client and test it out and see, is this something that our farm system can handle? Are we willing to divert resources and build new workflows around this? And so we kind of test pilot project it, for a year. Mm-hmm. And it was making enough revenue. We saw that it could scale and we were willing to continue to build that. And so that now, as a result of having a new product at the end of, you know, for that kind of a client, you know, we essentially have successfully created a second avatar. So that's sort of how it morphed for us. Do I think that you can have a business without an avatar? I guess the way I would answer that question is that I feel like you may not know that you have an avatar. You maybe just don't know mm-hmm. that you do. Right. So yeah. I think every business has an ideal customer that is perfect for it. Perhaps you just haven't done the work to identify it. And if you did, you would really start seeing some crazy results. So I think it's possible to have a business, run a business without really dialing in your avatar. But I'm just telling mm-hmm. you have one. You just need to go figure mm-hmm. out what it
yeah.
is.
yeah. Yeah. Yes. And make your job easier with marketing once you actually know that mm-hmm. information.
Yeah. I mean, the benefits of having clarity around that are just, you're not going to be wasting as much time and resources. Like if you're running ads, for instance, you won't be wasting as much money talking to people that, you know, are not your people. Mm-hmm. I also think it's going to give you more clarity about what content to be putting out into the world to try and find more of those people. You'll just be able to personalize your messaging everywhere on your website, social, you know, all the places that you do that, do your stuff, and you're going to be mm-hmm. more effective, the more personal and the more yeah. specific you can be.
I think people want also to like get everybody. They want all the customers. They want to, you know, they want to like attract yeah. this abundance. And I think part of you, there is an attract and repel component to this. And like, you know, like you were, I love that you said earlier too, like people get too afraid, they get afraid to be too specific, but like the more specific you are, the, like you said, you basically are like getting in their head. We've all had those ads where we're like, I've only thought that in my head. And now it's like right in front of me, you know? And I think that's really what you want to kind of dial down into. And you're identifying the problem, a problem that they have, like what's their pain point, you know, what is actually that you're solving for them, like what is the product that you're offering solve for them. And so yeah, I think that's an important point. So let's talk about the CSA customer. Can we like dig into that avatar a bit
for the flower subscription?
Yeah, for the flower mm-hmm. subscription, let's like dig into that. I know this isn't your like wheelhouse, but we're the flower people. We'll just be your little we'll play along.
Guinea you can
guinea pig for you. Yeah. I've said so many times, I think I said it on your podcast too, but I said I could market a veggie farm like nobody's business. Sometimes there's like flowers, I'm like, it's a luxury item, you know, thinking like the recipes and all kinds of fun yes. stuff. I think like, man, veggie farmers, there's so much content out there. Here we are yeah. growing flowers. So
but sometimes when so you're really close to your own product though, I think it's harder to see it, right?
Yeah, it can help. This is true. There's lots of ways to market flowers. So just there's sometimes I think, man, I don't even cook really, but I could probably whip up some sort of recipe. It's a joke. I do that with my marketing. Like I share with my newsletter all the time that like my newsletter people know that I don't cook. And so every once in a while, when I drum up a recipe, it's a real big deal in my newsletter. People comment. I did it last year. So it's a big deal if Lindsay throws out a recipe. So anyway, how do we go about finding out this information, I guess, about like this avatar? Like where's the starting point with this?
Yeah, you've said this already before, but we start with identifying the problem or the pain point that many of your customers have that drives them to come check you out in the first place. And you might be thinking, there's a pain point or a problem for people buying flowers? And the answer is, yeah, kind of. I'm going to encourage people to go check out the book called Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. I don't know if you guys have talked about that on your podcast ever, but this is a fantastic book. It's kind of like my number one recommended read for all of my Farm Marketing School members, because I think it's another great marketing framework. And Donald Miller's the author. He has a podcast too, by the way. He talks about how every customer has three levels of problems. And like the first one is the physical, the actual physical problem. The second level is the emotional problem behind that. And then the third, like ultimate level, is the philosophical problem that you solve. And so like if we were going to think through that lens. Like I like to use the example of somebody who wants to hire someone to mow their grass. Like the physical problem is my grass is too high. Like it needs to be cut. The emotional problem is like my neighbor's grass looks amazing and mine looks like crap. And like, I don't want to be embarrassed and have people say like, who's that? Right. And then, you know, the third one, like the philosophical problem, well, that one's a tough one. I'd have to think about that. That's not like good versus evil, but like, you know, there's my point is that there's usually like a feeling problem. And then there's like just the actual physical problem itself. So in the vegetable world, the problem is that we're all hungry. Like we need to eat food. We get hungry. This is a recurring problem every day. But deep down, there's other reasons that drive someone to buy a CSA vegetable box. It's like, well, I feel disconnected from my food. I don't know where it's grown. I don't feel secure about like, does it have chemicals in it? Like, how do I know it's safe? My kids are eating it, or my kids are like eating like crud. And I want to make sure that I train them in these beautiful, like healthy eating habits and set them up for life. Like that's what I want this to be about. I'm creating food habits, right? There's other deeper levels going on. So like, what would that look like? I'm going to push this back at you. For a person buying flowers, what is that? Can you see like a physical versus a, you know, emotional level distinction here? What would you guys
say? I mean, I think I'm just thinking about my own flower CSA. I kind of have with my group, there's two different kind of people. There's a really intrinsic like self-care piece to the flower CSA. It's like, I'm going to treat myself. It's the person who buys it for themselves.
Yeah.
So that's a different person than the husband who's someone who's gifting it. So the person who's gifting it, his problem is, it's usually a he, I hate saying him, but, or their problem is that they don't know what to get somebody who seemingly has everything, you know? So they're like, how do I get, they don't really need another trinket. They need an experience or they want to do something for them that maybe they wouldn't normally do for themselves. And there's that gift-giving piece. And then there's the self-care piece. It's the mom, you know, who writes in her order notes, you know, I'm so excited that I get to – I'm treating myself each week with the quiet car ride to the farm to pick up my flowers. I'm going to get away from my kids for that short amount of time. And that is like a self-care component. So I'm curious, like with the flower CSA, like what do you think about having those two different – can there be two different avatars within a revenue stream? Because for me, I'm really seeing like two, just thinking about, you know, my personal CSA.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that you have two really powerful messages that could be spinning in your sales, in your sales messaging in different places for sure. I'm thinking about like, I'm resonating with the treating myself, indulging myself.
Yes.
And every time I go and pick up those flowers, it's a vote for me, right? It's a, I'm good enough. I'm worth it. This is a way that I remind myself every week that I'm amazing and beautiful. I'm also wondering, like for gifts though, like if you're that husband or guy, maybe it's not a husband, it could be a partner, but like if you're buying that present, maybe sometimes it's like, I wanna be able to point to something that says I'm taking care of this relationship, or I'm trying to build goodwill. And this is a ritual I can put in place that makes me value this relationship, or try to show that I'm doing something to take care of it. You know, like, is that sometimes like the motivation?
Yeah.
Or I want to make sure she knows I love her. And this is my my way of being able to say that phrase every time I hand it to her.
Yeah, because I mean, there is a group of husbands that pick up the flowers for them, that their wives don't even come pick up the flowers. It's something that they come pick up and then hand deliver to them, because it's the action of me getting you the flowers that is what really counts. So it's just so interesting. Like, I feel like we speak in different seasons of what we're doing. So like right now during Christmas time, we're speaking to that gift giver
a lot
more than we are to the self-care. To me, the self-care piece starts coming in the spring when things are starting to warm up and people were going to get out. And it has, so it's, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, how we speak to our different customers within those different seasons of flowers, because it is a luxury item. I mean, what we do is a luxury item. I mean, even with veggies, like, people do have to eat, you know, but people really don't have to buy flowers. So I think that's marketing really comes into that, and how we're selling that is important.
I've heard of people who are using our, we have a flower CSA too. I don't grow them, but we have some people who tell us stories about, I pick this up and I bring it to my grandma at the nursing home every week. So this is the thing that brings cheer for someone in my family. And it's a way for me to show my appreciation and love for her. And I guess what I want to point out here is, like, find out how people are actually using your product and catalog them. Because each one of those vignettes is a potential marketing message. You know, you can snap a picture of that moment happening with a customer and grandma in the nursing home and post it with their permission. But, like, and now you've suddenly given someone an idea. That's how I could be using this, right? So finding out from customers, how are you actually using my product? And sometimes you're surprised. Like, oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that was being done. Okay. And you just found another way to market it.
We have an interesting thing that's happened with ours too, where people actually gift it instead of in lieu of flowers at the time of the funeral, they'll gift it to the spouse of someone who's passed. And so then it's, like, used in memory. So, like, they're receiving flowers maybe 6 months down the road in honor of the person who's passed, you know, and gifting that share in that way. And I don't know why this just popped into my mind, but I feel like that when COVID was really the beginning of COVID in 2020, is like, people were just way more in tune, I feel like, to priorities of what really mattered. And I think we've all talked about it in the flower industry, and I think it happened with just farmers markets in general, people wanting to source local and know where their food came from and feel like a connection and sort of grounded, because everything around us was really spinning. But in the flower world, people were buying, for me, 10 bouquets at a time to leave on doorsteps of other people. Like, I'm not joking. I had multiple customers that were buying, you know, 10 plus bouquets at a given time. And so I've always tried to, like, that stuck with me when it happened, because I'm like, that never left. We're now clouded with a whole lot of other things, right? Ball practices started and life is piling back on, and social media is a, you know, we're addicted to our phones. Not that we weren't back then, but, you know, life clouds those priorities. And so for me, that's where I keep going. I'm like, that's not lost on people. That yearning where everybody, I mean, when I say we had a line from our farm down our road, it was like basically over a quarter mile long, where people were waiting an hour to potentially get one bouquet. I mean, it was the most insane thing. And I think it's because it made them feel good. And I think ultimately that's what flowers do, you know? And so trying to like tap into that, I've always tried to remember that with my marketing, because I think deep down, that self-care person, that's why they're buying. That makes them feel good and connected and slow. I think those flowers attach them to something that they don't have in their everyday life. That's what makes them feel, I think that's what makes the U-Pick so appealing and all those things, because it's like a desire that we want as a human that we aren't necessarily getting. Just, I guess I can market flowers. I don't know. I'm just rattled off some stuff.
Your comment earlier made me think about, you know, when I was a new mom, how that would have been so cool to be getting a bouquet of flowers for, you know, 2 months. When I can't get around and when I'm feeling bad about myself and overwhelmed. And that would be another opportunity to try and encourage dads, like, hey, good. Get the subscription if you just had a baby. So like identifying where are those moments when someone needs to feel important, needs to be told you're beautiful, you're worth it, you're amazing. Like that's what the bouquet is doing. It's sending that message. And where in life do we need to hear that? And that's probably why it was working in COVID too. Like people needed to be reminded of that message. You're beautiful. You're amazing. Even though I can't hang out with you, I'm thinking about you. I wish I could be hanging out with you. Right.
Yep.
Flowers are pretty cool.
They are. Yeah. They're amazing. They really do. They do connect people in a way. There's so many memories are attached to flowers too. Like, you know, I think even selling like a peony subscription, like how many people think about peonies and they think about their grandma, you know, or their aunt or somebody that's special to them in their life. It's like, that's such an important way to, you know, an easy way, I think, even to market that.
I lived in Austria for a year, and there was a tradition that if you went to someone's house, mm-hmm. like you always brought flowers. I don't know that. I don't think that's a thing here in America, but like you would always go to the farmer's market and grab a bouquet and then show up at their house. If they were having you over for coffee or whatever. Yeah. It was like a faux pas if you didn't do that. So I don't know where that, where are those moments to in our world, right?
Yeah.
Well, we need to bring that to America. Let's go.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That needs to be our mission.
Yes.
Gosh, for sure.
So we've kind of like identified the pain points or what desire does our customer avatar have. So we've done that. And something I know you talk a lot about, Corinna, is then developing like a sales funnel to start marketing and start speaking to those people to with the eventual goal of them purchasing your product and finding value in your product. So can you explain to some of our new listeners who maybe don't know what a sales funnel is, like what is it? And then what does it look like in your farm? And how could we introduce a sales funnel into our own flower CSAs?
This is one of my favorite topics. I have a whole class just on auditing a sales funnel and building one in my farm marketing school. But yeah, so the sales funnel is basically the steps, the milestones that are in your customer's typical journey through your brand. From the point that they're completely oblivious that you even exist to becoming aware that you exist to turning it maybe into a warm lead, like being warmed up, then buying your product, getting your product, and then wanting to buy everything you have. So like what are the milestones? And I like to like tell us like a metaphor or a story of a road trip. So when I headed out west long ago, I was moving from college town in Massachusetts all the way to my first job in Washington State. And I took a road trip with my brother and we mapped out our route, right? We had stops along the way that we wanted to see. And that's how we decided when we were going to get off the path and do something fun. And so we want to map out a similar journey for our customer. And you will see patterns. There are things that a lot of your ideal customers tend to do, experiences that happen to them, feelings they have, setbacks that happen, obstacles, questions in the buying process. And then ultimately, like once they, you know, the typical first thing they want, the typical second thing they want to buy, like you'll see patterns. And you try to map that out and you guide them to those next steps. And you know, in my case, I was just trying to get to Washington. You know, you're taking your people to the flower subscription. Like that's where you want to take them. So how do you get them there? And you can't just like bonk them over the head and make them decide to buy. Like it is a process, just like building a relationship with someone is a process. It takes time and there are certain things that have to happen first, second, third. And so that's what the sales funnel is identifying what are those milestones. And again, when you know the framework behind marketing, you basically build a milestone for each stage in the framework. Sometimes there's two milestones in each stage, but like some are more difficult than others. You're just always taking people somewhere. So for example, at the top of the funnel, so this is when people first come in, you need to have a system in your marketing sales funnel that is attracting people in the first place. Like you're putting out content that's going to attract a person that will ultimately want to buy the thing that's at the bottom of this funnel. And so that a lot of times people immediately think social media, that is a common place to be putting content. But if you're a flower farmer, you're obviously putting content out about flowers because that is what you sell. So it could be your production, some of your, you out in the field raising them, putting the seeds in the ground, cutting flowers. But we can talk in specifics in a second, like what that would look like. But there's just this awareness stuff at the top. And then you need to have like more content that's going to actually try to get them onto your email list. Like how can you get their contact information so that you can be cultivating and nurturing that relationship and trying to get them to buy the first thing. And then there is a moment, a milestone where you have a first offer and maybe it isn't your flower subscription. Maybe it's something else that's a little bit more of an easy ask. So what is that thing? And when do you issue that offer? And then how do they actually pick up what happens after they get that first offer? What do you do to make sure they absolutely love it? And then how do you issue the second and the third and the fourth offer? And what do you continue to give them to warm them up? What questions do you have to answer so that they feel ready to buy the subscription? Maybe they're confused how it works. And then there's, you know, this what else can I sell them once I've gotten them there? Like, can I get them to buy a gift subscription for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all these different steps that you're brainstorming, you're mapping them out, and then you're actually having to build these these different assets and put them in the right spot and pull the trigger when it's appropriate so that they fire at the right time. So we can kind of brainstorm like what that would look like mm-hmm. for a CSE yeah. subscription. That is essentially like what a funnel is. And a lot of it is very intentional. You've got these mm-hmm. things in along the journey. You've got these milestones firing all the time because people are constantly coming into the funnel, right? New people. And yeah. they need to see the stuff at the top of the funnel. Whereas you have people that have been in it for a while, they need to be seeing stuff that's at the bottom of the funnel. So you have to have it all sort of going at the same time. And some of it's going to resonate with different people, depending on where they are. Mm-hmm.
I know. I feel like you need to probably do an audit on mine. I'm just sitting here thinking like, oh boy, let's do Shannon's. Let's not do mine. Let's see. Yeah, no. Let's like, okay, so let's walk through because that's like my next mm-hmm. question. Let's go through it. So like based on that, like talking about like a flower CSA, let's talk through like what content would be at the top and like, let's walk through that journey with that CSA customer. So
the way that I have my kind of funnel set up now, I have a lead magnet or some way that I got their email address and they're added to my list. From there, I think the next day or 2 days later, my first email is just like an about us. Like, wow, thanks for being part of our new community. Here's just a little bit about – here's our story, you know, and it's just kind of – I'm not selling anything. It's just like, hey, thanks for signing up and just trying to give them a taste about – what's coming, what we do, who we are. It's really focused on who we are because I'm really trying to connect with my customer at that point. I'm trying to get them to have the like, know, trust, you know, factor. So that's kind of what my first email looks like. Am I on the right track, Corinna, or what would you say?
Yeah, I would actually say that that's actually pretty deep down into the funnel. So, you know, the top of funnel stuff is like, because you already have them on your list. Like that's a major accomplishment. You've gotten them to give you their contact information, which is sort of like, you know, asking someone to give you their number when you're dating, right? Or you want to, don't just like walk up to someone in the bar and like, give me your number. Like they'd be creeped out. So like, what is the stuff, you know, that happens first? So I would argue like, do you have SEO working for you? Like, do you show up on Google if someone does a search? What kinds of mm-hmm. stuff are you putting on social media that, you know, mm-hmm. people can just sort of scroll and dabble or somebody can tag them and they're like, oh, that's mm-hmm. cool. And they don't have to do anything but stare at you from across the room, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I think top of funnel stuff for a flower subscription might include like a whole range of things just in social media where you're making people aware that you make beautiful things. So it could be like inspirational quote posts that are highly shareable. Because that's mm-hmm. really what you're selling, right, is inspiration. Pictures mm-hmm. of beautiful flowers, the people who are harvesting them, or customer photos of holding mm-hmm. these gorgeous pictures. Some of those pictures we were talking about earlier, like the daughter with her mom in the nursing home mm-hmm. surrounded by flowers, or the husband passing a bouquet of flowers to his wife at that critical moment. Those kinds of things that just make people aware, oh, I could be doing that. Mm-hmm, flowers mm-hmm. in my life. This is what it looks like to have mm-hmm. flowers in my life.
Oh yeah. Mm. I love that. Cause that's like,
yeah. Me too.
I'm taking this whole time. I'm just taking notes. I'm like, it's so nice to just get like a refresher of it, but it's like, you're right. They need to see themselves in your market. They need to see themselves in that place. Right. To then want to like trust you to go to the next spot in that funnel.
Yeah. This is part of that research element, right? Where you are, what I like to tell my farmers is to imagine you have a video camera and you're following your customers around. What are they actually doing with the flowers? Like capture that moment on film when the interaction happens and what, and you'll have maybe like 5 to 6 common things that surface. And those are the moments that you want to showcase that life transformation moment, right? Where the transaction happens, the real emotional transaction. Or what are the thoughts people are having when they get the flowers? What would they say to themselves in their head? Put that on a quote card. Like, I'm worth it. You know, like those kinds of sentences and power phrases. Those are things you might put at the top of the funnel to help a person imagine this could be me. This is what's actually delivered. I think you could also do like challenges. You could have a little contest where you ask your own customers to send you pictures or answer certain questions based around your product. And then that also ends up spiraling, and you can use that same content to attract new people because they'll give you beautiful photos or help your future clients see how the product could be used. How to arrange flowers. It could be a little video, different. Yeah. Like I was thinking, I have this vase in my kitchen and my flowers always go in there. And so I was like imagining, this would be a longer project, but like 8 short video moments that you store on your phone every time the bouquet gets tossed and a new one gets put in, new bouquet, old bouquet, like just capturing that on film, like 10 times and then stitching it all together into a video. And the message there is like, I don't know if someone just saw that, like they're really quick, right? They're really quick frames, but that the message there is like, I always get flowers. Like you'd have to think of some cool words to go with it, but the subtle message is this is a habit. This is like a part of my identity. Yeah. Like I always get flowers and it's just what I do. So you're just brainstorming things like that. Like how are people actually using it, or the picture of the vase that's always there. I don't know. I'm brainstorming with you right now too, but that's what top of funnel is. It's like making people aware of what the product is, but also showing them how it could change their thoughts, how it could inspire them, how it could transform their life. And then like, then you get to sort of that middle of the funnel, which is where you're, how do I get them on my list? And that's a little tricky. I'm curious what you do for that. Like Lindsay, what how do you do that?
Yeah. So to getting them on my list, there's a couple different ways that I use. And one of them is, I mean, obviously we have a lead magnet, and that lead magnet for me on my website changes. You know, I feel like I'm trying to get them with, whether they're on my social, you know, trying to drive them to that email list. And I think sometimes it naturally happens, whether they have a product that they're purchasing from us or they want to come to a workshop, they naturally get on that list, but it will change in season. So, you know, 7 tips on how to keep your flowers fresh. I have some ideas where I'm actually going to do, I think, a video next year of like arranging flowers, so that, you know, it's one thing to say like, how do you keep your flowers fresh? And it's in a PDF, but I'm such a visual person myself that I love to see a very short video of like, hey, this is how you take a vase, because we've all dropped flowers in a vase, right? If you don't know what you're doing, you drop them in, they all open up in the center because the vase is too wide. Mm-hmm. And like, how do I teach somebody how to take a market bouquet and put it into a vase and make it look nice and presentable? And so that's one thing. So like obviously social lead magnet, we change it up seasonally to try to get there. But we're also, if they're coming to a farmer's market, you know, we have the same thing. Like if our lead magnet is like, do you want those flowers to last for, you know, 10 days? Then here's how. And it's like the little QR code and it scans and then it sends them that download. So there's those sort of ways. And then let's see what else I do. Oh, at our U-Pick, that's another way. We will ask at our U-Pick, you know, it's like, hey, if you want some to be able to keep those flowers lasting when you get home, like here's some information, you know, on that. And we do the scan and we try to capture it that way. So I would say that's probably my most basic ways. If they're purchasing tickets from us or something like that, I do think I'm missing some opportunity to capture people when they're coming to my flower stand. So it's a self-serve stand. And I've identified that as like kind of an area where we need to have some rework, because it's very new to us this year. It's not on my website yet. So
I want to point out here that like the lead magnet moment may not actually be for the CSA subscription. The opportunity may be like for a slightly different offer, like, because it sounds like, I know that you are an inspiring person. A lot of people just love seeing your posts and they love your stories and your pictures. And you may just have to say, you want to get into my world? Like, I'm inspiring people, right? And they just want to get on your email list because they want to continue to be inspired by you. And then now the work is done. They're on your email list. So maybe it wasn't a lead magnet for the subscription. It was just to, because you're an inspiring person and you're going to get more inspiration from me. And then once you have them on the email list, you have a process that warms them up to, hey, come to my U-Pick. Maybe that's your first offer. And then eventually you get them to sign up for the subscription. So the subscription may not be the first offer you make. It may not be the gateway, but I just want to point that out. But I also was thinking, like, for me, I had a brainstorm here, and you guys might hate this, but I was thinking about the power of the note. When I got flowers when I was younger, like, it was the note that I couldn't wait to read. And I don't know if people still write notes when they deliver flowers. Maybe that's not done with the flower farming.
Sometimes. But like, sometimes. Yeah.
If you were to go to a florist and order flowers for someone, like the note is a moment, right? You get to write out something. And so I was like pondering, you know, what could that look like to bring back the power of the note to the CSA subscription, flower subscription, and that every week you have a like a really inspiring quote that's meant to make the woman feel like a badass, you know? And every week it's a different one and they can't wait to read the note. Like, what's her inspiring word today? But then a lead magnet might be 10 beautiful love notes you could write to your wife or something. Like, you've got little templates for them or something. So when they use your flowers, they have like, like a little poem or they've got something that, I don't know, it's something to test. It might totally bomb, but it might be that the inspirational quotes would be something that a person would want to download because that's deep down why they're following you, because you're inspiring.
Yeah, I'm not even sure, thinking about my CSA subscription. Shan, what's yours? Like, I'm trying to think the middle of my funnel for my CSA subscription. I feel like, do I have that? Like, I mean, I think what Corinne is saying, like, there are, I mean, obviously I've got some sort of sales funnel because I have people on my CSA, but where, like, do you have something specific for yours with your CSA?
That gives them an education piece, you mean?
Yeah, I guess like mostly what she was saying, like where I was talking about my lead magnet wasn't specifically for my CSA subscription. I don't know that I even have this. I like that idea she has where it's like specific to getting them onto, if the CSA is what we're talking about and that's the bottom of the funnel, getting them to purchase that, like getting them on there.
The lead magnet that draws, that puts them in the CSA funnel is like my flower subscription guide, which is basically a PDF download that says, here's some of the flowers that might be included in spring. Here's some of the tulips. Here's what's, you know, oftentimes featured, because the obstacle is that they don't know. They don't know flowers. Generally, people don't know. So it's like a 3 or 4 page guide with each season with like basically squares of the different photos of flowers that might be included. And then it has like a little one page that says, here's the perks, you know, 1 hour photography session. So it's really just so when I'm marketing the CSA, just in my social or in my email list, I'm saying, hey, are you curious about, you know, what you might receive in the CSA, or do you want to know more? Download the guide. And then when they download that, I get their email address and then they're tagged in my system as that they signed up for the CSA buyer guide. And then they go into the CSA funnel.
That's brilliant. That's a really good one. And you could include like how it works. You can include how to take care of your flowers, answer frequently asked questions in that guide, right? It's basically a sales promo brochure, basically.
That's because the CSA is so, so wonderful for off-season income for our farm. It's so – that's the best thing about it. So for that, it's a huge part of our business. So I know maybe not every revenue stream deserves its own sales funnel, but in my opinion, that was kind of like one of our top ones that kind of gets its own level of attention, because it's kind of its own beast, you know, it has its own rules and all that.
And then going back to that funnel, like content conversation, once you have identified a lead magnet, a way to get them on your list, now you've got them raising their hand and saying, I'm interested in the CSA with a guide like that. That would be pretty obvious. And then you could have like a sales email sequence, for example. That's something that I would do, just like 5 emails that drips out automatically. As soon as someone subscribes to that guide, they're going to get an email every day or every other day for about a week. And it's basically going to pitch different elements to try and get them to take that subscription. And so that would be your sales mechanism. You might do it like over the phone though. You might be like, oh, I'm going to reach out to this person individually over Messenger or over email and do an individual pitch and try to enroll them in it. You can do it that way too. But there's some kind of moment where you have a sales pitch element that's, you know, after to try and get them to take the first step and actually purchase and spend money with you. So that's an element that you'd build. And then you would need to have some kind of, I guess the next bottom level of the funnel is, how are you taking care of the client once they've purchased? They've technically gotten to the bottom of the funnel, but how do you make sure that they have a great experience? This is the fulfillment piece, so that they want to come back and buy it again. Or do you have more things you could offer them after that? And then you have a process for pitching those offers so that you can increase your revenue per customer. But a lot of farmers, especially in the CSA world, don't spend time thinking about the fulfillment piece. Like they just, they deliver the goods and they trust that you know how to achieve success with the product. This is really important in like the vegetable space because a lot of people screw up how to actually use the food and then they waste it. So what does that look like for a flower farmer? Maybe it's not as severe of a concern as it is for people like me, but making sure you have your fulfillment dialed in, because if you don't get that right, then people will just buy it once and then they won't come back. So
there's definitely a fulfillment piece for us. I mean, I would say even, you know, Shannon and I talk about retention often too, because a lot of times it is that somebody buying it as a gift. And so you're, how do you get them to then convert that customer who it was the recipient of the gift to then be somebody that just can't live without these flowers, right? So like, you know, it may get purchased for them every year or it may not, which, you know, retention is kind of where we're at. But the fulfillment stage for us too is like, they need to feel confident about arranging those flowers too. And like getting, even just transporting the flowers home can be an issue where somebody leaves them in their car for an hour or like something as simple as like just the communication on that and like having them feel all the feels that we've been talking about, and having success with the product is then going to convert them to a customer that's going to want to be a lifelong customer for you. So yeah, I definitely think that's definitely a piece of it for us as well. So is that basically, do you feel like that's the funnel?
The only part that would be left at the end was like, what other offers do you have besides just renewing your subscription? Like, can you brainstorm other things that this flower lover could buy? Maybe it's, do you have at some point at least one or two times where you ask them to buy a gift subscription for someone else? Or, I'm going to give you an extra bouquet on your final week. And here's the catch. You have to give it to someone else that you think might enjoy a flower subscription, you know, and they get $10 off or whatever if they decide to buy it. So do you. Like, you know, where do you have an opportunity to issue additional offers? Or do you do dried flowers? Are you going to invite them to your U-Pick? Like when do you make them aware of all the other ways that they can come in and binge on your flowers?
I know. I feel like I'm interviewing, but I feel like I'm just, are you in a trance too? Cause I'm like, processing. I have so much stuff, especially, but I feel like amped about it because it's like going into the new year and feeling like there's so much potential to like refresh and get charged with that stuff again too. It's like so so important.
Just thinking about the retention piece too, and I feel like it, maybe it should be paid attention to even more because it's so much easier to retain a customer than to get a brand new customer. So it's like, well, I guess what advice have you seen work on your farm for that retention piece? Because I know like I modeled one of like an early bird offer off of one of your podcast episodes, like trying to get them right away to re-up while they're in the feels of, you know, having their current flower subscription. So what are some ways like retention wise that have worked really well for you on your farm, Corinna? Like what are some of those tactics that you use?
This is a powerful question. And I often encourage farmers to pay first attention to their fulfillment before they do the rest of their funnel, because you're right, you got to close that revolving door. And for us, the way that we have built retention, there's several, but I would say one of the key kind of philosophies is that people come for the vegetables at first, but they stay for the community. And so I try to find ways to create community, a community identity as a CSA member. Again, kind of like building a church, like how can I help them meet each other? How can I help individuals in the community feel like a star? Like this is how I have a Facebook group. And I think this is helping me because they're able to go in there and post things that they're making with the food. So they're becoming experts within our group space. There are people tagging, oh, you've got to ask Tara about that. Or so-and-so is the grilling expert, right? And they begin to like develop their own personality and identity within the larger community. They feel special. They feel seen. They feel important. And I wonder if for like a flower farm, if, you know, people come for the flowers and they stay for the what? They stay for the, is it the inspiration? Like, what is it that they would miss if you suddenly just stopped? And so if it, let's just say it is inspiration, like how can you encourage them to, or maybe it is community, and like what you need to do is help them inspire one another somehow, finding other people like them that value and have that identity of, you know, I'm a flower lover. Like I'm not just I'm a flower lover, like I love myself. Maybe that's like that's what some of them are saying, you know?
Yeah. I feel like for me, that's where it is. It's like, I think, you know, I've sort of, my community has sort of changed in some ways as I've changed and sort of dialed more in on my own self-care and prioritizing myself and, you know, in the season of life that I'm in. And that has really pulled in that type of customer. And I really think that if I stopped my CSA subscription, there would be, and I feel that way about a few things with my farm, where there's just like this, well, how am I going to like get those feelings, right? Where the people are like, they feel good about the thing that they're doing, and they also feel good about what they're supporting and what that whole thing, the whole farm means to that person. And so I think that's great. I think that's a great answer to that question, because that's why people are buying. They're buying with the feel, you know, emotion and what they're getting from it versus the actual product itself. So
yeah, what would they miss? And then figure out how you can leverage that.
Okay. So Corinna, do you just want to like recap? Because I know we've just talked about a ton of information. I know I have 3 pages of notes right here. No joke. and I'm sure everybody else does too. Do you want to just like sort of recap for us with like everything we sort of talked about today with like some bullet points to step to get their, you know, avatar up and running and whatever, for whichever sales outlet they want to use it for?
Absolutely. So I would say the first thing is to identify who your primary customer avatars are and do some research on them. Take some time. It's going to be well worth it to figure out what are their primary pain points or problems. What is the desire of their heart? What is the transformation that they're seeking and that your product will deliver on? And if you can identify what those are, you're going to be like way far ahead in terms of your marketing, because you will know the message that you need to put out there. You will use their words as your marketing. Second of all, the next step is to set up kind of or outline or wireframe your sales funnel. How are you going to capture that customer? How are you going to attract them and get their eyes on you? How are you going to warm them up? What is your lead magnet going to be if you're going to try to get them on your list? What's your first offer going to be? How are you going to pitch the sales offer? Getting clear about that and building that system. How are you going to excite the customer and make sure they love the product, right? Like just building out a visual map of like, how do I want to move people through this journey? And then the third step would be to identify, well, where do this unique subset of humans, where do they live? Like, where are they hanging out so that I can go attract them in the first place and get them into my funnel, and start building those assets so that they stitch together and start working.
Well, Corinna, thank you so much. I can only speak for myself. I'm sure I'm speaking for Lindsay that even us, we always love like learning right alongside our listeners. And today was the perfect example of that. So I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. If they want to dive deeper with you, learn more about marketing, get to connect with you, how can they do that?
I guess I would send people first to my podcast. So I have the My Digital Farmer podcast. It's the thing I do best, the thing I'm most proud of. And it's a weekly show for farmers where I teach you the farm marketing principles and I interview guests from time to time. Lindsay has been on the show, so go back and look for that episode. And then I also have something called Farm Marketing School, which is my monthly online membership. It's for farmers to help them build out their marketing pieces of their sales funnel. We work on one project at a time. It's a DIY online school. I think there's 10 projects in there right now. You can go in and slowly get that marketing funnel built. And you can go to mydigitalfarmer.com/FMS to learn more about that.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Corinna. There's a lot of Ohio girl power on the podcast today, which I love that. Thank you so much. Yeah, yes. Thank you so much. Really learned so much from you today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, guys. Thanks for joining us for another episode. If you're new here, welcome. We are so glad that you found us. If you haven't heard yet about our insiders group, or maybe you've just been on the fence with joining us, this is your sign to join. We're adding new content each week for you. Tips and tricks. You get a live Zoom, 1 hour-ish. Sometimes we go over live Zoom each month where you can answer your specific burning questions. You get Lindsay and I for that entire hour. It's recorded. It really is such a good way for you to get instant access to Lindsay and I. And it's only $20 a month. So in addition to all that content, you get a really wonderful growing community of other flower farmers who want to connect, answer each other's questions, inspire each other. We really, it's such an amazing group, and we would love for you to join us. You can always find us over at Instagram at Dirt on Flowers. Drop us a comment or message and let us know what you want to hear more of. Thank you so much for being here. We really hope that you love today's episode as much as we absolutely thought it was so fun to record with Corinna. So as always, we'll see you at the same time, same place next week.